Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time to talk all things Dirty Birds. It's Falcons Flyover. With John Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Back with you in the Kia Studios on a Sunday morning on Sports Radio 92.9 at The Game. It is John Chuckery Show, live with you till 2:30 today. We'll get you into Atlanta United pregame action at that point. 404-741-0929. That is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. We do ask you to download the Odyssey app since you're not in the car as much, but want to listen in on the station, the show. Odyssey app's the easiest way to do it, right? Take one of your devices. You can put it on. You can put it on your smartphone, your Alexa speakers, your tablet, or your boombox or your Laserdisc or your Commodore 64, your Casio watch, whatever your device is, just put it on something to catch us when you're on the go. Social media, you can find us at 92 on the game on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So it's the best way to be a part of the show. Give us a follow on my personal Twitter page at JMCH316. That, of course, your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. We got a guy, Eric Slaughter, producing the show today, hanging out with us here. This is your daily look at all things Atlanta Falcons. It is the Falcons flyover. We'll get to some audio from postgame here in just a couple of minutes. But a couple of the Pro Football Focus grades I was looking at from the other night. Eric Harris was a 39.7. Here again, you mean to tell me that Richie Grant can't understand the defense, but it's okay to keep trotting out Eric Harris, who can't do anything to help you win a football game? What does anybody watch? I'm being dead honest. What does anybody watch about Eric Harris running around on a football? And here's what I hear. Well, he knows where to be. Oh, you mean like chasing down wide receivers and tight ends he can't cover? Oh, you mean like getting blown up on a running play and getting run over? Oh, you mean like missing open field tackles? But he's there. Cool. So he's at the spot where he can't make a tackle. He's at the spot where he gets run over by a running back. Or he's at the spot where he's chasing down a pass catcher. Cool. That's great. I feel much better knowing that he's at the right place, except he can't do anything about it at that point, except just watch everybody go by him. That's why I got a 39.7 grade. Daron Harmon, Eric, why play those guys? Again, how can you tell me Jalen Mayfield, who, by the way, got a, what was his grade? 50.6. How can you tell me that you can... That guy understands enough to know, as a coach, he understands enough to know, but Hawkins and Grant have had to beg to get themselves on the field. I'll keep saying it, and Dean Pease has disagreed with me, and he's called me out on it. Well, you can't take your lumps because guys go, take your lumps? What do you think Eric Harris is doing when he's out there on the field? You're taking your lumps every minute of every hour of every day with Eric Harris out on the football field. Eric Harris is Julio Teheran. He's a guy that has started in the NFL, but he's not an NFL starter. And they just keep playing him and playing him and playing him and playing him. At some point, then anybody look and say, geez, man, you know, hell, we might, you know, 7 games left. Maybe we should give some of these younger guys a chance. Well, we're trying to win and get in the playoffs. How are you going to win and get in the playoffs with Eric Harris playing safety? How? How in God's green earth are you going to win with some of those guys that run around on the field? Every big highlight for Eric Harris is either him getting trucked by a running back, missing an open field tackle, or a penalty. He had the 15-yard penalty to start the game. Or he's out of position or running behind a pass catcher who's catching a touchdown or something else. Well, he did have half a sack. Cool. That doesn't make up for the nine other plays where he basically just kills your football team. Sorry. Anyway, and I'll tell you the frustrating part, and I'll take the heat on this one. They need Calvin Ridley to come back, and I don't know what the deal is. I've heard some rumor and innuendo, but they need Calvin Ridley to come back. And I don't know what his personal stuff is he's dealing with. I want him to get healthy, and I want his mind to be right, and I want him to be back at full strength, not just physically but mentally. But they need that guy back. I don't know what it's going to take to get him back, and I don't know when he's going to come back, because what we hear is, you know, every week it's, you know, well, it's 1 week at a time and this, that, and the other. I understand. I understand it's a delicate balance. But, man, you got seven games left and your football team needs you. Your football team needs you, especially when you're dealing with all these other things, with Hurst on IR now, with Patterson missing time, and with the lack of playmaking that guys like Mike Davis are giving you. And Russell Gage was better, but, you know, 1 week Russell Gage is good, the next week it's no catches. Ridley came into this year as your top playmaker. Nobody knew Patterson was going to be this way, and everybody knew Pitts was a rookie. Ridley came in as your number one offensive. I'm not talking quarterback. I'm talking outside of quarterback, because quarterback's always the most important position. But I'm talking about of your skill position people, he was your most important guy going into the season. And again, not trying to, you know, take away from what he's dealing with and some of the things that I've heard, but still, your football team needs you. And I know he can see it. I hope he gets healthy. I want him to get right. I don't want him to come back until he's physically and mentally ready to come back. But relay him the message, man. Your football team needs you, man. Your football team. And I'd hate to just throw away a season. When you got a guy like that and you just throw away a prime of his season, you can't get those things back. All right, let's get to some audio. Let's hear from Matt Ryan, the quarterback, first. Here's him talking about their play in these last two games.
It's just across the board. We haven't thrown the ball well enough. We haven't run the ball well enough. I've got to be more accurate. We've all got to, you know, be more effective with what we're asked to do in terms of the game plans.
Yeah. Look, Matt's got to play better. I said in the Wade Ford show, this is where you need your quarterback to help you out too. Matt didn't play well, and part of that's on him. Part of that's they can't run the football. Part of that's they can't block anybody. It's a combination of all the things. And I need Matt to play better. I need Matt to play like he was in that stretch earlier in the year when he was offensive player of the week in the NFC, where he was averaging 300 yards and three touchdowns a game for about a 4 or 5 week stretch there. I need that Matt back. And I understand there are limitations. And I understand he's also throwing to Tajay Sharp and Zacchaeus and guys like that. I get it. They don't even have Lee Smith. Lee Smith was a guy that they were throwing a little bit of the ball to when he was healthy. I get it. But right now, if you know you ain't got the people, you got to figure out a way to get it done with the guys you do have. Part of that's coaching. Part of that's Matt playing better. Part of that's blocking for him. I wouldn't be mad. If you told me the Falcons got some penalties on their offensive line of scrimmage, especially Hennessy and Mayfield, because they chop block or something like that to start taking guys, okay. Well, we don't want them cheating. I do. Whatever it takes, man, protect your quarterback. Here's Matt talking about how the defense played.
I think our defense did a nice job keeping us in the game the entire night, even, you know, well into the fourth quarter, you know, making it a two-score game. We had chances, and we've got to find a way.
Yeah, look, the defense as a unit played well. Now, I know that New England is, I think they were, I don't know, they were like fifth or sixth, I think, in the NFL in scoring or something like that, like 27 a game, what have you. They did a good job. Now, they won't stop any of the really good offenses. I don't consider New England to be one of the top, like Dallas. Take Dallas a week ago, okay? One drive and you knew they had no shot. One drive is all it took to know that they didn't have a shot. Tampa Bay was going to do whatever they wanted at will, right? What Brady have, five touchdown passes in that game too? You don't see that stat very often from an NFL quarterback. The defense has played well, but you also at some point too, and they did a better job of this, and you also played a rookie quarterback who's taking sacks, but go sack good quarterbacks. Find a way to put good quarterbacks on the ground. You have to do that in the NFL. I love when people tell me, oh, sacks don't matter. Sacks matter a lot. You notice when you sack the quarterback, when you change down in distance in the NFL, how drastically different your defense is? Falcons had all kinds of problems getting off the field on third down. Coming into that game, the Falcons were the second worst third down defense in the NFL, and the Patriots were the fourth best third down offense in the NFL. What happens when you sack the quarterback? You change down in distance, and you give your defense a much better shot to get off the field, and the defense did that. And there are some good things. Grady's been terrific this year. A.J. Terrell's been terrific this year. But you have some glaring holes. Hey, at least Fowler had half a sack, although he doesn't do a whole lot, and he's missed three games because of injury. There are some guys. I'll say it like this. Mike Davis doesn't need to be back next year. Dante Fowler doesn't need to be back next year. Go ahead and purge the roster next year. Next year, in this upcoming offseason, is your year to start purging the roster. Because you can get a – Mike Davis only a $750,000 cap hit. You save $2.5 million there. I have to look up Fowler's number, but I know their contract with the pay cut that he took and all that, you can get out of it. Might as well purge the roster going into next year. All right, here's Matt talking about if his toe affected his play at all.
I don't think it impacted throwing, and I thought I moved fine. So I didn't think it impacted it too much.
Well, again, Matt's been one of the most durable quarterbacks in the NFL. He knows it. At this point of the year, everybody's hurt and banged up, right? Everybody's got something going on. Let's hear from Matt talking about playing without Patterson.
CP's been such a big part of what we've done offensively, but we just didn't, the rest of the group, we didn't do enough to be as productive as we needed to be.
Well, is he going to be back? You know, they've got 10 days, right, if you will, before they play Jacksonville. And I hope he's back. They need something. They need somebody. I mean, I'm hoping Ollison, if Patterson's back, I'm hoping Ollison gets a little bit more run. If that means they have to cut, and I like Wayne Gallman, if you have to cut Wayne Gallman to keep Kadri Ollison up on the active roster and let him play a little bit, then cut Wayne Gallman and let Ollison play a little bit. I mean, they've played hokey pokey with Ollison. Cut him, keep him, cut him, keep him, cut him, keep him. Put him on practice squad, bring him up. Put him on practice squad, bring him up. Just let him play a little bit. See what happens. What do you got to lose at this point? All right, let's get to Arthur Smith. Here's Arthur talking about digging out of this because they have before.
Because we've done it before. Feels ugly right now. And in this moment, yeah, you feel obviously pretty poor. And when you go there, you get to 4-4, you get a big win. And then obviously you guys all watched the last two games. So we've done it before, Josh. And it's like I told you before, it's continual improvement. You hope not to ride the roller coaster. We got to fix things, and we're going to get them fixed. And we'll get them fixed in a hurry.
The problem is you came into this year knowing that the front part of your schedule was a lot of teams that felt like you could be better than and beat, right? Start with game one. You felt like you were better than Philadelphia and could beat the Eagles. Well, you laid an egg, okay? Felt like you're better than the Giants, who are not a very good football team. Okay, you went and beat them. Washington, not a very good football team, came in here and beat you. You know, you beat the Jets in London. Cool. Beat the Dolphins. Cool. Panthers, that's a toss-up game. Panthers defense, really good. Panthers offense, below average. Well, they did enough to win. Those were all games that you looked at and said, we can win. Even New England, as bad as you played against the Cowboys, you get blown out, have a little pride, you come home on a short week, you don't have to travel, they're banged up, you're banged up, you still got a rookie quarterback, and couldn't do nothing. Well, the schedule doesn't get easier the rest of the way. Yeah, the Lions and the Jaguars are games you feel like very much you can win. But right now, you feel good about playing Tampa. You feel good about going to Carolina. You feel good about going all the way across the coast to play San Francisco. How about at Buffalo, who's going to be playing for the top seed in the AFC? And then, obviously, the Saints game. Yeah, you beat them in New Orleans. That game's always a flip toss-up game. Falcons can win that game, lose that game. That's the way that series always is. So how much better do you feel about the way, and we'll talk more about this later on toward the end of the show, about expectations moving forward. Let's hear one last one from Arthur. Let's do the last one there. Arthur using this mini buy to correct some basic mistakes.
Well, I don't know if there's one thing you say, it's the most disappointing. I mean, we're not executing. We're getting ourselves, we're There's too many penalties that are putting us behind. You get into some of the fundamental mistakes you're making up front or on the perimeter. So everything. We got going here. We'll use it as a mini buy, and we'll do everything we can to self-reflect and get it fixed. Because there's a lot of things. I mean, it's everything we got to look at. It's never just one thing. I mean, a lot of times it looks like, hey, this guy misses block. We may have had a protection call. Guard may not have come down with him. You know, those are things that happen that you don't know unless you know the play call and the scheme.
Okay, this is where I shake my head. You're telling me that we have all these basic mistakes that we make, but you don't play your young guys. So you're telling me that your veterans that you have out there, these guys that are making all the basic mistakes, if everybody's going to make the basic mistake, why not play my young guys? You see what I'm saying? If you're telling me that we can't get the basics right, well, most of your guys are all your veteran guys, right? You got a couple young guys here and there, but your draft class is barely playing outside of Pitts. So who's making all the basic mistakes? Like getting trucked by running backs, not tackling in the open field, running behind pass catchers. That's not your young guys making those mistakes. That's your veteran that you brought in that's making those mistakes. The guys that won't be here next year. At least going to make basic mistakes. Let it be with your young guys, your rookies, your second-year guys. Let those guys make the basic mistakes that you're going to have here and you can teach them. Not guys who don't belong on the football field that won't be a part of this thing. Oh, Lordy. All right, when we get back, what's going to happen with Marcell Ozuna? Braves did make a move with him this week. Nothing that wasn't procedural, but it was a move nonetheless. Chuck Reed in the Kia Studios. Sports Radio the Game, Odyssey.com app.
The John Chuckery Show.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back with you on the John Chuckery Show. Hanging out in the Kia Studios on a Sunday morning with you. 404-741-0929. Solomon Brothers Diamond Text Line to be a part of the show. Odyssey app site, catch on the go. Social media, find us at 92.9 The Game. I'm at JMCH316 on the Twitter machine. 20 minutes from right now, we will talk to Jason Longshore. We will get you ready for Atlanta United. They were coming up after we are done here at 2:30 this afternoon. First round of the MLS playoffs gets underway. That game's on ABC, by the way, but you can listen to it right here on your home of all things Atlanta United on Sports Radio after the game. Jason Longshore and a man of many hats, Mike Connie, will be part of the call. So Jason will join us here at 11:40. Then, of course, 2:30 pregame, 3 o'clock kick for first round MLS action. So we'll break down with Jason what's going to happen later on this afternoon. Well, we still bask in the glow of what was the Braves championship. And now as we head in the offseason, and obviously how quickly the offseason, think about how quickly it's going to be when pitchers and catchers report. Well, I take that back. We still have a whole, there's still a whole negotiation and collective bargaining agreement that's got to happen. But in theory, in a perfect world, pitchers and catchers are reporting in just a few months here and be back to baseball. The Braves, obviously, forget their current roster and forget free agency and forget some of those types of things that are going to happen for the Braves. The Braves do have, obviously, the big lingering question, and that is Marcell Ozuna. Now, there was news on the Marcell Ozuna Braves front earlier this week as Marcell Ozuna was reinstated from the restricted list. Not that that means anything. That's just kind of a procedure that you have to go through. But he has been reinstated. Now, for Marcell Ozuna, he obviously has a lot of the legal stuff figured out, right, with the community service and the supervised meetings and the rehab and all that stuff, right? He's got a lot of that kind of stuff figured out. There's still some little things that have to be worked out. And then, obviously, the main thing that concerns the Braves is, what does MLB do as far as the suspension goes? Now, I'm of the opinion, I don't think MLB is going to hammer down on Marcell Ozuna. There were multiples of charges, I guess the Fed charges or whatever, that were dropped in his case. He has agreed, you know, to the legal aspect. So it's not like he's serving jail time. It's not like he's, going to Leavenworth or what have you. You know, he's going to do community service and he's got to do counseling and some things like that. And again, you can argue or not, whatever, you know, about is the penalty right or whatever like that. But that's everything on the face of everything that's been agreed to. And there's probably a few other things that will get mixed in there. But by and large, he's got a lot of the legal aspects of his troubles out of his way. So now what does baseball do? Do I think baseball is going to suspend him for a whole year? No. I don't think at all they're going to suspend him for a whole year. Will baseball suspend him for half a year? I don't think baseball is going to suspend him for half a year. Now, obviously, for the Braves, any and all suspension that Marcell Ozuna gets from the league is going to mean less money that the Braves owe him or have to pay him, or if you're talking about a trade or this, that, and the other. Because here's the problem with immediately talking about trading Marcell Ozuna. It's not about his legal issues this year and what he could get out of this year. Remember, Ozuna still has two more years. And let's be honest. If we're being honest, okay, the Marcell Ozuna that we saw this year looked a lot more like the Marcell Ozuna in St. Louis than the 60-game I had a few extra months to get. Remember, and I brought this up, Ozuna himself said he took the time off from the COVID, you know, when baseball was trying to figure out when they were coming back. Even he admitted that he used that time, the COVID time down where they weren't playing, to get himself in shape and get himself ready to go. Well, playoffs and a more normal offseason, I'm not telling you that Marcell Ozuna couldn't have had an impact and couldn't have put up some good numbers, but go look at his numbers while he was healthy and in the 48 games. And by the way, he is getting a World Series ring out of all of it. But look at the 48 games that he played for the Braves this year and what his production was. His RBI number, you know, wasn't bad. I'm trying to get to his final numbers here. His RBI number wasn't bad. Gosh, why have I got to go through all these different people just to find the number that I need out of all of it? Here we go. 26 RBIs in 48 games, 6 doubles, 7 homers, hit .213 with a .288 on base and a .356 slugging. That's only a .645 OPS that he had. Now, compare that to last year when he was the Silver Slugger winner for DH in baseball. You know, 18 homers and 56 RBI in 60 games, hit .338, 6th in the MVP. Again, Silver Slugger. You know, his OPS the previous season was 1.067 to .645. So 400-some point drop in OPS. Now, I'm not telling you he couldn't have turned it around and things and that and the other, but he had 208 plate appearances. He only had 59 less plate appearances year over year. Let me repeat that. He only had 59 less plate appearances year over year, where, by the way, he led the league in plate appearances in 2020. His numbers don't look the same. RBI number, like I said, not bad. Not bad. I mean, 26 RBI in 48 games in a normal season isn't bad, okay? So even if he comes back, what's the player that you're getting? Are you getting the Marcell Ozuna that in 17 when it was time to go cash in as a free agent? 37 homers, 124 RBI, .312. Are you getting the Marcell Ozuna from 2020, motivated, ready to go, got himself in shape during the COVID pandemic, led the league in plate appearances, homers, RBI, total bases, hit .338? Or are you getting the Marcell Ozuna that, you know, 2018, 23 homers, 88 RBI, .280 batting average? Okay. Or the 19 version, 29 homers, 89 RBI, .241 batting average. Which one of those guys are you getting? I think baseball's going to hit him for about 50, 60 games. I think baseball's going to hit him for about a third of the season, I think is what he's going to end up getting hit at from Major League Baseball. The point is, what do you do with him at that point? Do you keep him, move on? Well, you just trade him. Okay. What team is ready to look at him and say, I've got two more years with, I think it's $36 million that on the remaining 2 years of his contract. And you're talking about a guy who is now, let's see, what is his age officially here? He is, he just turned 31 years old. So he just turned 31. So before you start to get into a full season for Marcell Ozuna, he's going to be 32 years old. And he's got 2 years at $36 million that will be remaining on his contract, which is not terrible. But again, if you're talking about a 32-year-old outfielder that's 20 homers and hits .240, is that worth $18 million? Does somebody say, and I think that's the thing. I don't think his value is based upon what is suspension or the legal, nothing. I think people are looking at it and saying, okay, what Marcell Ozuna am I going to get for $36 million? What's the 32 and the 33-year-old Marcell Ozuna gives me what for $36 million? And I think that's where the Braves have trouble. Should the Braves keep him? Will the Braves let him play again for this franchise? I don't know. You know, the Braves have been the kings of reclamation projects, right? You know, they brought in Bobby Bonilla and Reggie Sanders and Gary Sheffield, guys that a lot of teams didn't want to touch, right? And those guys came here and were model citizens. Same thing with Ozuna. Not that Ozuna's been, had a long history of being a bad guy, but he had a couple incidents, you know, of it. But this has been the ultimate reclamation project organization. That's one of the things that the Braves have always done really well for a long time. Guys that were people like, were like, eh, turn a little bit sideways, eh. Reggie Sanders, Bobby Bonilla, Gary Sheffield, guys that weren't, you know, always the most popular guys in their clubhouse and things like that, and guys that were maybe hard to get along with, or guys that maybe had some off-the-field issues or whatever. They've been really good about getting those guys here and dropping in line. And I think Marcelo Ozuna would be the same way. He loves it here. He wanted to play here. That's why he signed the contract extension, you know, to obviously to be here. You know, and that was kind of like, felt like it was the 23rd and a half hour, right, to get all of that done. But I'm not as convinced as some people that the Braves are automatically moving on from him, especially with the DH coming. I don't think they're going to be able to afford Jorge Soler. And when people talk about the salary cap of the Braves, that we'll see, AA said they're going to spend more money. Yeah, there's some creative math in that, because just by the nature of the committed contracts and the arbitration numbers that the Braves have out there, they have to spend more money. They wouldn't be able to keep, you know, a lot of this roster together if they don't spend more money. Just even Ronnie. Ronnie's only going to get $15 million this year in salary, but that's still $10 million more than he got the year before. Even Ozzie Albies only makes, I think it's $2 million more, but you add $10 million more here, $2 million more there. You know, Freddie made $21 million this year. Freddie ain't playing for $21 million next year. Freddie's, and we had that, we were all over that one. I told you that he wanted a 6 or 7 year deal. What was that, months and months and months ago? Wanted 6 or 7 years. Now we're hearing that it's that sixth year because Freddie didn't want to do this again. I told you, it's common sense. It's not super insight. Freddie Freeman wants one last contract, wrap it up for his career, so that come 30 whatever years old, that he, you know, when he plays out his contract, will he be the same player at 38 that he is right now? No, but you can't expect that. Well, he can't afford that. Yeah, you can. He can afford that kind of money. For a three-time Silver Slugger, one of the best players in the history of your franchise, MVP, helped lead you to a World Series. Yeah, you can eat a couple of years. They did it with Chipper. Was Chipper the same player as last couple of years here with Atlanta? Was he the guy that, you know, was the MVP of the league in, what, 99? Did he look like that guy? No, of course not. That's baseball. It happens to everybody. Go look at Jim Rice and Mike Schmidt at the end of their career. Look at Dale Murphy at the end of his career. Guys fall off pretty quickly at times, you know, in the non-enhanced era of baseball, right? Quote unquote. Now that there's your other myth, the non-enhanced era, whatever. So yeah, you'll probably have Freddie Freeman for a long time, and you probably don't get as much production in the last 2 years as what, but who cares? With all due respect, it's Freddie freaking Freeman out of all of it. But so he's gonna cost you more money. So everywhere you turn, look, Dansby's arbitration number was what, $10-11 million? He made six this year. You're gonna almost double his number, and that doesn't even count trying to re-sign him to a long-term deal, which we'll get into that, because I have my thoughts about what they're going to do with Dansby. I know what they should do with Dansby. I'm not sure that they will with Dansby. That will be the key question out of all of it. But I'm not as convinced that they will trade Marcell Ozuna or just move on from him as some people are. Because with the DH coming, you know, Rosario's a guy that you could probably re-sign for a decent amount of money, and you use him as another outfielder. I don't think they're going to be able to afford Soler. I wouldn't be surprised he goes back to an American League team and goes and mashes for all of them. You saw they signed their backup catcher, right? They signed a backup veteran catcher, so they got that locked up and ready to go. I think the big question is, do they want to sign a veteran starter, or do they feel like, okay, you know, you've got Morton, you know, you've got Freed, you know, you've got Anderson, and you know, you've got Anoa. And I'm not even counting Mike Soroka, but before anybody texts me about Mike Soroka, you can't go into next year thinking you've got Mike Soroka as a start. If Mike Soroka comes back and starts, great. If he doesn't, he doesn't. I'll believe Mike Soroka's back and as a starter and pitcher when he gets the ball in his hand and he stands on the rubber for an Atlanta Braves game. That's when I'll believe Mike Soroka is coming back. You don't go into next year planning on Mike Soroka as one of your five starters. You hope, and it would be great, and it would be wonderful, But you can't go into next year thinking he's one of your five starters. You can't. Just too much injury, too much missed time at this point. And you've got four guys you know that started for you last year a good bit. The question is, do you want to go another veteran or, you know, go the Tucker Davison, you know, Bryce Wilson, you know, go that kind of route, mixing and matching some of those guys, right? You know, going with that. I'm fine if they go with the young guys because we're talking about your fifth starter at that point. So who cares? I mean, with all due respect, who cares? They're still the most talented team in their division. And guess what? They're going to be the most talented. I saw where the Mets, did you see where the Mets have said that supposedly the owner, what's the owner's name of the Mets? That crazy guy, right? He's like the hedge fund billionaire and all that. He said that he supposedly, the story is, he told the GM to do whatever you got to do and load up and spend what you got to spend to make the Mets better. Okay, we hear that every year. Steve what? What's the guy's name? Steve Cohen, yeah. So supposedly Steve Cohen has said the Mets, you know, the Mets can spend what they need to spend and go get this roster right, and it's deficient. Well, yeah, it's deficient. You can't just keep overspending on guys and hope for the best, but they're counting on Cano to come back. Remember, he was suspended. They're counting on a better season, you know, out of Lindor and things like that. Okay, good. Let them do whatever they want. They're still not a better team than the Braves out of all of it. But I'm not as convinced that Marcell Ozuna is going to be moving on from this organization to somewhere. I wouldn't be surprised if they keep him around, especially because he'll probably have some kind of prorated number by the time his suspension gets over with, and now you can plug him right in as your regular DH. All right, Jason Longshore going to join us coming up here in a few minutes. We'll get ready for Atlanta United and NYC, FC, YMCA, DTA, all that good stuff. It's all next. Chuck Green, the Kia Studios. Sports right now to the game, Odyssey.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, back with you on the John Chuckery Show, hanging out in the Kia Studios on a Sunday morning with you. 404-741-0929. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line, you want to be a part of the show. Odyssey app, site, catch it on the go. Social media at 9:10 The Game. At JMCH316 on the Twitter machine. We're going to take you all the way up till 2:30 this afternoon, at which point we will hand it off to pregame coverage. Atlanta United in action. First round of the MLS playoffs, taking on NYCFC, YMCA, DTA, and all that good kind of stuff. Here to help us figure all of this out is our color analyst for all things Atlanta United, Jason Longshore. He, of course, will be on the call with a man of many hats, Mike Connie, and he can be found on Twitter at Longshoe. Jason, as always, buddy, appreciate it. Thanks for a few minutes here this morning.
Yeah, what's going on? Thanks for having me on.
Well, not much. We get ready for first round action. Before we get into the matchup, I want to ask you, you know, when we talk about sports and playoffs and things like that, you know, we talk about the NBA, hey, it becomes much more of a half-court game and your bench shortens and all that. We talk about baseball. I say all the time, get outs without contact, make defenses have to make plays, things like that. What is sort of the calling card, would you say, for postseason soccer? What are some of the kind of, if you will, like 35,000-foot traits about postseason soccer?
I think the defense becomes a little more important. Teams that have a natural inclination to get conservative at times and defend from a deeper position generally lean into that even more in the postseason. But Atlanta United and New York City really aren't those teams. So I'm intrigued to see how this matchup plays out. We saw a couple yesterday in the first round in MLS Cup playoffs, and Philadelphia and New York Red Bulls leaned into what they do, and it was a very disjointed, a lot of fouls, lots of kicking and chasing. Both teams kind of accentuated what they already do. Sporting Kansas City dominated their game, took control, beat Vancouver. This one could be the most open of the MLS Cup playoffs because New York City's missing a lot of key figures defensively. And Atlanta United has a good defense, but this team is really built on that attacking unit that they have, and I think they're going to lean into that today.
So if I said what is the area of the field that Atlanta United has the biggest advantage and what's the area of the field that New York has the biggest advantage, what would you tell me?
I think generally we talk about the field in soccer in thirds, and I think for Atlanta United, where they have the advantage over NYC is the attacking third against NYC's defensive third because of those absences for New York City and because of the talent that Atlanta has in that end of the field. I think New York City's advantage is a smaller one, but it's on the other end. It's their attacking third. I think that's their best grouping on the field today, and it'll be against Atlanta's defensive third, who I think is very good. The question is going to be, how does Atlanta defend? Are they going to defend as we've seen the majority of the time under Gonzalo Pineda with three center backs, two wing backs? It's a narrow pitch, so it takes away a little bit of the ability to drop into a line of five when you're under pressure because there's frankly just not a lot of space. So does Gonzalo Pineda go with a line of four, sacrificing a center back, but getting an additional holding midfielder in to try to negate that New York City advantage a little bit?
Jason Longshore joining us on the WaitForIt.com hotline. Of course, he'll have the call with Mike Conte coming up at 2:30 for pregame, 3 o'clock kick as Atlanta United is in New York to take on NYCFC for first-round MLS playoff action. You know, we spend so much time, especially toward that second half of the year, Jason, where it's when we talk about Atlanta United. Well, they got injuries here, and this guy's out, and this guy's out. Well, it's international break, and, you know, this guy's not playing, you know, whatever. You know, it feels like it's rarely we just talk about Atlanta United full strength, ready to go, laser-focused, here we are. But now here we are, right? We've had a couple of weeks off. Everybody, by and large, is healthy. I mean, is that one of the big advantages for Atlanta United, too, is that we're finally kind of at the point where, okay, I got everybody back, healthy, couple weeks off. Now we can just laser focus on one thing, and that's making this run at the MLS Cup.
It's a huge advantage. And when you compare the two teams today, Atlanta has a giant advantage in that area. They can play what they've been playing for a while. You have continuity. You have a group of players who have gotten results on the road recently as well. But you also had the ability during that international break where Miles Robinson was away for one game with the U.S., but he was in Atlanta the whole week training because he was red carded in that Mexico game, which actually helped Atlanta United a lot because he didn't make the trip to Jamaica. The person who replaced him on the U.S. roster for that trip was James Sands, who was pulled out of New York City training the last week ahead of that match. Returned on Wednesday, probably, went through a regen, so he had training with New York City last week, but not as much. And their injuries, really, Atlanta United can look at this game from, we have a lot of options, we even have surprises if we want to do something a little bit different because of the personnel we have available. New York City is more in the sense of, what kind of duct tape and paper clips can we break out to make this team work today?
Jason, in reading a little bit, Sean Johnson, the goaltender for New York, played really well, you know, trying to make this playoff run. But you look statistically, it's not been great in the playoffs for him. Is he a different player now? Is that something to watch that Atlanta United maybe can get going early against him? I mean, you know, a guy red hot down the stretch versus some of his career, which one do we lean more toward?
Yeah, I think Sean Johnson is a very good goalkeeper, but he's very streaky at times. And he is capable of great saves, but he's also capable of some big mistakes from time to time. And we've seen them in the regular season and in the postseason. I think when you compare the goalkeepers, Brad Guzan is by far the steadier one. I think Sean Johnson's going to have to be really on top of his game today because the line in front of him, he's missing two regular starters, at least one. Another one is a big question mark. You've got some pieces you can move around, but you're also missing holding midfielders, which affect you defensively. Johnson's going to have more to do today than I think he's typically used to, and we'll see if he can rise to that challenge.
Much does coaching play in this? I mean, you know, Gonzalo Pineda, obviously, this is his first time as a head coach, you know, in MLS Cup action, but you know, he's been around the league and he's been in plenty of these kinds of playoff matches. It's not like he doesn't have experience. It's just really his first time as being, you know, that lead guy on the sideline.
I think where coaching changes this time of year, it's not so much in the lead up to it. It's not so much in the training sessions the week before, setting the lineup, setting the shape, the tactics. All of that is pretty consistent with what you do. It's in game. Because there potentially is no tomorrow. You have to take maybe bigger risks at times with your changes in game. And look, having five substitutions gives managers the ability to do that in a knockout game more than typically they could in the past. So if things aren't working 30 minutes into the match, and in a regular season format, you might be thinking, you know what, it's really not working. I'm going to get to halftime, make a change there. I don't want to embarrass anybody by making a sub here and have them feel like I'm blaming them for everything. In the postseason, if it's not working in 30 minutes and you've got five subs to use, you make it. You do it. You make that change. to fix things because you can't afford to fall behind.
Jason Longshore joining us here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. 2:30 will be pregame action. Atlanta United, NYCFC, as we get ready for first round MLS playoff action. Any weather issues or anything like that in New York today? Everything looking good up there? No concerns or worries about? I know we, you know, the field, it is what it is. It's short, it's long, it's this, it's that, whatever. But any weather issues or anything like that that may come into play?
No, the weather's beautiful. A little chilly, but it is beautiful. The pitch looks beautiful as well. And I think the thing we have to keep in mind about it is it's narrow. It's a little short. But the surface itself looks really good. With the Yankees being bounced out of the Major League Baseball playoffs early on, that allowed at the stadium to relay the pitch. And so we don't have any problems with that. The bounces shouldn't be crazy. It's just going to be a little bit of pinball and a little bit of bumper cars at times because everything is condensed.
All right, Jason, I want to get into something a little bit different with you. I was reading some stuff. There's going to be an expansion draft for Charlotte coming up in, what, about 3 weeks or something like that? Three, four weeks, whatever. I think December 14th, I guess, is when that draft comes along. Is Atlanta United in a – I don't know what the right word is. Not precarious, but are they one of the clubs that could lose some decent pieces out of this expansion draft?
It's possible. They could only lose one. You can only lose one player in it. You can protect 12 players, and there's some restrictions and rules on some players are auto-protected. You're going to have to leave a good player unprotected. Atlanta United has a deep roster. They have a strong roster, so you get past the 12 players and whatever auto-protects you have. Yeah, you absolutely could lose somebody, and Atlanta United has lost players in the expansion draft in the past. But that's why you build a strong roster, and that's why you build a deep roster. And as we talked about coming into this game, you know, there's a lot of choices for Gonzalo Pineda in that regard. I think Charlotte coming into the league in general is fascinating for Atlanta United because, I mean, we've heard it from day one out of Charlotte's ownership that they, in a lot of ways, are making Atlanta their rival, and they're trying to make Atlanta that bad guy to the Charlotte fans. And look, it's no surprise. It's Falcons and Panthers ownership as well. So you've got that kind of rivalry already baked in. It's easy to play off of. But Charlotte's also modeling a lot of what they're doing after what Atlanta United has done successfully. So it's going to be fascinating. And I think that rivalry, I'll call it now, I think Atlanta-Orlando has been a rivalry. It's been far more even lately than it was early on. I think Atlanta's got rivalries with the Red Bulls, I think with New York City, to be honest. But Atlanta-Charlotte, I think, is going to be the kind of blood rival for Atlanta United, and I think it'll have a feel of like Falcons-Saints. I think it'll be one of those kind of rivalries, and Charlotte coming in, doing a lot of good things early on, they're going to be strong pretty quick, in my opinion.
Yeah, it'll be the first, at least regional type of rivalry that, you know, Nashville or Orlando have tried to make or what have you. I get that.
It'll have the nastiness that the Atlanta-Nashville rivalry hasn't had.
Right.
I think maybe that'll pick up over time, but I think Atlanta-Charlotte from day one, there will be a little bit of nastiness to it across the board, which is good. I think that's good. It gets the emotions going. That's a good thing.
All right. We haven't really talked since some of the front office contract extensions and things like that. And, you know, look, I hear a lot of different opinions about Carlos Bocanegra. And, you know, there were some questions about going into this year about, okay, have a lot of the things that he's kind of done, whether it's managers or personnel moves and things like that, really worked. But obviously this franchise has gotten itself back on track and in getting back to where it needs to be. How much do you think that the confidence has kind of come back in Carlos or some of their front office personnel with, okay, now we've got our legitimate manager. We've some of these guys, you know, Barco's obviously had a really good year, Moreno and these guys. I mean, some of these moves are really looking like they're working out now. How much easier and more confident now does the front office look where we're at now versus, let's say, maybe first part of the year?
Frankly, I think it should have been there the first part of the year because when you compare and you look at how this year has gone and the front office had to make a big, bold decision to move on from a manager that everyone nationally and internationally thought was the correct hire in Gabriel Heinze. It didn't work. They made the decision to move on in midseason and corrected the season. Added Luis Araujo as well, one of the best additions in terms of talent in MLS in the last couple of years. But you compare over the 5 years, Atlanta United, in its first 5 years, there's only two teams that have a better points per game in history, and one of them is the Chicago Fire, and we're talking about the very early days of MLS. You know, Chicago's the only team that in their first 5 years has won an MLS Cup and a U.S. Open Cup. What Atlanta United's done on the field backs up that this front office has done a good job. What they've done off the field in terms of having the two largest outgoing transfers in league history, having three of the four largest incoming transfers in league history, putting a homegrown player on the national team in George Bello, developing a national team starter and I think essential piece for this next World Cup in Miles Robinson. Across the board, I mean, you can get into the community side, you can get into the academy and the growth there. There's so many different pieces that Atlanta United has gotten right to the point that teams are modeling after what Atlanta United's done. So for there to be a lack of confidence based off some moves that in a salary cap league sometimes you have to make and you can't get sentimental about them, and sometimes you have to move on from players that, yeah, are fan favorites because they don't fit in your cap anymore. The records, the production, and the business side as well backs up that this front office has done an amazing job from day one.
On Twitter, at Long Shoe, he'll be part of the call starting at 2:30 on pregame. I did hear Mike Conti's private Learjet landing in the background there. So
Yes, it is.
Yes, so there you go. Jason, have a good call, my friend. Enjoy your afternoon up there, and let's get a victory, okay?
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. We'll see you. When we get back from the top of the hour, we get to an NFL squib kick. We get you ready for NFL action coming up. No Falcons today. Woohoo. It's all next. Trucker in the Keys Studio. Sports right now the game. Odyssey.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.